Now, President Biden released his budget proposal last month, and Congress is on the clock with a deadline to release budget plans by April 15th. The Democratic president and the Republican House are likely to have big differences, and there's a risk of a debt ceiling standoff over key issues. And looming over all of that, a big national debt, over $31 trillion worth, and concerns about annual deficits adding to that tally. Our next guest is with a federal budget watchdog group with us for a look at tax and spending alternatives and what they would mean for the debt. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you worried about the national debt? Are there things you want to see change on the tax or spending sides of things? Are there changes that should be off the table? Social Security, the Trump-era tax cuts? Or are there tax spending cuts or tax increases you do want to see? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas at WPR.org. Mark Goldwine is Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I gave a very broad number there. Can you give us the current state of the debt and the direction it's moving in?
Oh, well, it is not pretty. I like to measure the debt relative to the size of the economy, and it's pretty close. It's at about 97-98%. Within 5 years, the debt is going to be at a new record, 106, even higher than it was after World War II.
How big an impact did COVID-related emergency spending have?
So in total, we spent about $5 trillion on COVID-related emergencies, which is a good 10% of the economy. And so without, you know, everything, all those numbers I told you, that 106, maybe it would be 95 without the COVID emergency, which is still quite high.
We see often parties when they come into power being less worried about debt than when they're out of power. Why should we take this debt seriously, no matter which political party might be running the White House and Congress?
Yeah, I do think that's the huge political problem, right, is Republicans love cutting taxes, Democrats love increasing spending, and they love beating each other over the head over adding to the deficit, but not really looking in the mirror. The problem is everyone's looking at the next election. Nobody's looking at the next generation. And this debt really starts to eat at our economic growth. It's part of the reason inflation is so high right now because of that deficit spending. And it's part of the reason that interest rates are rising.
We have the president's budget proposal. It offers, at least they claim, about $3 trillion in deficit reduction over 10 years. Does it do that, or at least ish? And if so, where is that coming from?
Ish. So first of all, $3 trillion would be a really good start. We would need about $16 trillion to balance the budget. We need about $8 trillion to stabilize the debt, which I think is what our goal should be. So $3 trillion is... it's not a drop in the bucket. It's a real start, but it's only a start. The president's budget gets there mainly through tax increases. They actually have about $5 trillion of tax increases, along with about $500 billion of savings from the spending side. But they spend a lot of that on new initiatives for childcare, for college, for healthcare, you name it. And so they're left with $3 trillion. That $3 trillion, you know, I think an independent estimate would come up with more like two, but it's real deficit reduction.
Now, the president's budget doesn't matter if Congress doesn't pass it. Republicans control one of the chambers of Congress. Now, there's this April 15th deadline. They're supposed to have a congressional budget, but we don't seem to take our budgeting real seriously anymore in terms of meeting deadlines and that sort of thing.
That's right. The president was a month late with his budget. Congress, I've heard some rumors, is not even going to try to put forward a budget, which is pretty nuts. We haven't had we haven't seriously used the budget process to actually try to figure out our tax and spending priorities in 15 years or so. The budget process is so broken that we're lucky if we can actually avoid a government shutdown before October 1st.
That's the shutdown. And then there's this debt ceiling thing, ideas floating for some Republicans in the House to use the debt ceiling as a way to get some spending cuts. Now, some Republican leaders say, no, we're not going to do that. What do you think of that as a tactic to say, OK, we're going to risk this big debt ceiling chaos if we don't get the cuts that we want?
Well, first of all, the U.S. absolutely, without equivocation, needs to raise the debt limit. If we don't raise the debt limit, it means that the president either needs to break the law and stop spending that spending money that he's required to spend, or we need to stop paying our creditors, in which case there's a global financial crisis. So we need to raise the debt limit. But historically, the debt limit has almost always been used as an opportunity to take stock of our fiscal situation. It was how we got the deficit reduction agreements, Graham Rubin Hollings in the 1985, 1987. It's how we got the 1990 budget deal. It's how we got deficit reduction in 1997 and 2011. So it's actually pretty normal to use the debt ceiling as an opportunity to have a fiscal conversation. There's just a difference between having a fiscal conversation and threatening default. And we cannot threaten default under any circumstance.
Talking to Mark Goldwine from the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, looking at the state of the debt, the annual deficit, and budget negotiations in the White House and Congress. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring out a caller. Jed is with us in Lacouture. Jed, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
What did you want to bring up, Jed?
I'm just wondering if you're speaker or you thought, when can we ever look at the Pentagon budget or the defense budget as something we can actually touch as opposed to healthcare and education and childcare? When can we ever look at certain things and hopefully just find some monies there? Just, I don't know.
I got you, Jed. Thanks for the call. And that takes us down the path of specific budget lines. Mark, let's start there with the military. Are there opportunities for cuts? Are they politically realistic?
I think absolutely. There's a tremendous amount of waste in our defense budget on weapon systems that are only there because they benefit some company in some congressional district, on bureaucracies that don't make sense, you know, on-base schools inside the United States where there's perfectly good public schools, commissaries, all sorts of ways. And then we could think more broadly about force structure, right? Do we really need the size of military? So that absolutely should be on the table. We did have some reductions in military spending in the 2011, 12, 13 period. But since 2017, Democrats and Republicans have basically come together with a you scratch my back, I scratch yours, where we've dramatically increased both military spending and non-defense spending by about 40% since 2017. So we're going in the wrong direction.
Thanks for that call, Jed, at 800-642-1234. We heard via email, Dave in Winona, Minnesota says, please ask the specifics of how they plan to do that, cut the deficit. They either have to cut Social Security, health care, or defense, or raise taxes. Let's talk about Social Security and Medicare, the so-called entitlements. How do they factor into all of this, Mark?
Well, look, Social Security and Medicare are the two largest federal government programs. Defense is about the same size as Medicare. And so I don't think you can have a serious plan to address the debt that doesn't look at Social Security and Medicare. With Medicare, the really good news is there are so many policies that can reduce costs without meaningfully reducing benefits. For example, there's these great private Medicare Advantage plans. They're actually very efficient, and yet they cost the federal government more than the less efficient public Medicare, basically because they're overcharging. So there's room to get savings there. There's room to get lower spending on drugs by encouraging the use of more generics instead of name brand drugs. There's room right now, if you go to, if you get dialysis in a dialysis center, Medicare pays less than if you do the exact same thing at a hospital. That doesn't make any sense. And so there's a ton of room for efficiencies in healthcare. And I do hope that's a place where the parties can come together, because both Presidents Obama and Trump proposed a lot of these reforms in their own budgets.
We're talking to Mark Goldwine at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, looking at the national debt and the big choices in the current federal budget negotiations. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Cuts you do or don't want to see, tax changes you do or don't want to see, call in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or your questions. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Mark Goldwine, Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget, looking at the current state of the national debt. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Mark, before we go back to our callers, you have a thing on your group's website where people can play the home version of the federal budget. Can you tell us about the debt fixer program you have up there?
Yeah, absolutely. Go to crfb.org, and we actually have two very cool tools. One's called the Debt Fixer, and that lets you look at ways to cut defense, reform Social Security, lower health care costs, and raise taxes in order to get the debt on a more sustainable path. The other tool we have is called the Social Security Reformer. And I think as many folks know, Social Security is only about 10 years from insolvency, which means the trust fund is going to run out. The reformer lets you adjust the benefit levels, the taxes coming in, the retirement age, to build your own plan to make Social Security sustainable and prevent that insolvency.
Got a link to the debt fixer up at WPR.org/Central Time. Back to your calls now. Rick is with us in Monona. Rick, hello. I'm sorry. Rick in Monona. Hi.
Hi. This isn't exactly cheering me up. It doesn't sound good. And my question is this. What if we don't deal with this? What is that a really dark future we're looking at?
Rick, you're asking a great question. I'm going to tell you the truth is we don't know. Let me tell you the best case scenario, which isn't all that great. The best case scenario is the United States, as the strongest economy in the world that borrows in our own currency, can stumble along like this forever. And in that scenario, the higher debt, it does something called crowd out investment. Basically, people buy bonds instead of investing in the private sector. So in that scenario, our economic growth just keeps slowing. Our wage growth keeps slowing. A larger and larger share of our budget goes to interest. In fact, interest is on course to be the single largest government program in 25 years' time, larger than defense, larger than Social Security. So the best case scenario is we stumble along, and this just cuts into our ability to grow and invest. The worst case scenario is we have a fiscal crisis. And the banking crisis we just saw a couple of weeks ago, is kind of a good microcosm of that. What we saw at Silicon Valley Bank was they had a bunch of low-yielding government bonds. And when the interest rate went up, those lost value, and then the banks lost value. Imagine a scenario where interest rates really spiked, so the value of portfolios around the globe were declining. That could cause a global financial crisis, a fiscal crisis, if you will, something maybe that looks like the Great Recession or even worse.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Rod joins us now in La Crosse. Rod, hello.
Hello. I was an honorary discharge USMC at 77. But I seen probably 10 years ago or maybe longer, maybe less. But I seen, I'm pretty sure it was a PBS broadcast they had on television. They had a pie on there. It showed how much everybody was getting. And they showed like welfare was like maybe a pinch, maybe an eighth of an inch on that pie. And then they sat there and they showed what they were given for, you know, taking care of roads and all this stuff. But more than three quarters of that was to the military. Now that's all the taxpayers' money going to that military stuff. Now, when these guys sit there and they crash a jet that costs umpteen millions of dollars, why do they not sit there and have to pay that money back to the people they sit there and they just stole it from?
Rod, thanks for the call. Now, Mark, I'm assuming that graph was what we call discretionary income. I assume a chart that included Social Security and Medicare would look different. But Rod's point, military, a big piece of the pie.
That's right. I mean, military is large, and we need to find ways to rein in some of the spending, as I mentioned. But it's about 15% of the total budget. The largest share of the budget actually goes to seniors for Social Security and Medicare. In fact, the federal government spends $6 per senior for every $1 they spend for kids. And a lot of that makes sense because, we have a health and retirement program specifically designed to support seniors that they pay into. But it's also very costly, and those costs are getting larger as we get older as a population and as our healthcare costs continue to grow.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rod. Mark, something I wanted to ask you about before we run out of time. You testified, I believe, recently before Congress on the impact of the Biden administration's attempt to forgive at least some portion of student loan debt. What are you seeing there?
Yeah, so I don't think people are aware that not only has President Biden called for canceling $10,000 or $20,000 of debt per person, but they've also taken a lot of other measures, including changes to the income-driven repayment, a bunch of targeted cancellations, this long pause. We added them all up. It's almost $1 trillion. The student debt actions since the pandemic have cost $970 billion. That's actually more money than the federal government spent on higher education for its entire history prior to the pandemic. It's three times the cost of the Pell Grants. And when we've looked at what we're getting in return, a lot of this money is going to support doctors and lawyers and MBAs. The money looks like it's going to increase the rate of inflation, increase recession risk. Some of it's going to help people that really need it, but it's so poorly targeted that in my opinion, and this is what I testified, I think it's really going to undermine the goals it's trying to achieve, make college more expensive and less affordable, and lower quality of education going forward.
And turning back to the big picture, Mark, bringing the deficit, the annual deficit down, putting a dent in that debt is going to require clearly cooperation between both parties in Congress and the White House. And people may hear that and say, so it's not going to happen at all? Do you have any sense of optimism that, in fact, that could happen?
Well, I'm optimistic on two fronts right now. The one is we have to decide how much to appropriate next year. And I do think we're going to stop this practice of Democrats getting a 10% non-defense cut. Democrats getting a 10% non-defense increase in exchange for Republicans getting a 10% defense increase. I think we are going to turn down the hose on the out-of-control appropriations. The other sense of optimism I have is that everybody understands healthcare costs are too high, and there's an increasingly good understanding of where those excessive costs are. And so I do think there's opportunity for us to come together to reduce excessive spending for certain types of providers, prescription drugs, Medicare Advantage. And if we did that, not only would that reduce the deficit, it would actually reduce premiums and out-of-pocket costs for seniors as well.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Mark Goldwine, Senior Vice President and Senior Policy Director at the Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. He joined us for a look at the latest on the national debt, the state of the federal budget deficit, and possible alternatives to bring it down. We have a link to that online debt fixer tool where you can come up with your own solutions at WPR.org/Central Time.